The size of the foundation, going back to what it was to what it is today, can you give us some numbers?
In 1964, we had a little downturn, and total assets at one point dropped to $10 million. In 1964, $10 million is a lot of money, but it had taken quite a fall. Before the recession hit, we were a little over $300 million. We're somewhere in the $250 million now, so we've held our own.
The combination of these trusts would be even more than that.
Well, that's the H.A. and Mary Kay Chapman, the two trusts.
Right.
Oh, Jim Chapman, Lita Trust, much bigger. You commented that when he died, his estate was $129 million. This is all public record, and I haven't looked in 2 years probably, but those trusts were in excess of $1.5 billion at one point. Billion with a B.
And so that trust will continue on forever and ever as well.
I think so. I've read it, but I've forgotten the details on that one.
The community is just so fortunate to have these kind of people. There are many foundations. Tulsa is blessed with a number of giving foundations.
Absolutely. Per capita, Tulsa has many more large foundations. I would say foundations in excess of $100 million than most cities. Philanthropy in Tulsa has run rampant for many years. And I think it's because children grew up with a family that were givers. They poured back into the community, so those children became givers. And then their children became givers. The LaFortunes, the Chapmans, Barnards, the Warrens. These are all large foundations that do great work for the city of Tulsa and the entire community.
There was a time when we expected the oil business of Skelly and all that to be giving, and then when the oil business moved out, we thought, oh my, what are we going to do? But we realized we had all these foundations that are still giving to it. Are there any other stories? You're a great storyteller.
Well, I can think two or three things. I came in from the office back in the late 60s. I had not worked for him all that long. And his car was in my driveway. I walk in and he said, well, I thought you'd be coming home about now. Well, I said, what do you need? And I could joke with him. He said, well, I brought you a gift. And he had a little container from George Salon Jewelers. Now, George Salon was an old jeweler in Utica Square that Mr. Chapman had used for years and years, who would have things designed for him. And he had a stud set that George Salon had made for him. It was platinum with a sapphire in the center, surrounded by white diamonds. Not gaudy. And in matching cufflinks. He said, I'm to the point in my life I'll probably never wear a tux again. He said, I've worn a lot of them. And he said, I've worn this set. He said, I had George Sloan make this for me years ago. He said, I've really enjoyed them. He said, I want you to have them. So I accept them and take them down to Bruce Weber. And I want to get them appraised because I know they're expensive. I give them to him, and he looks at them and said, boy, those are nice. He said, where'd you get these? And I said, well, Mr. Chapman gave them to me. And I said, you know, it's in a George Sloan box. I said, he told me that Mr. Sloan made those for him. Of course, he knew George Sloan. Two or three days go by, and Bruce Weber calls me, and he says, do you have any idea what those are worth? I said, no, I don't. He says, Donnie, I could give you $15,000 for them and sell them and make a profit. He says, if you go buy those today, probably $25,000. He said, he just gave them to you? I said, yeah. Met me at my house, gave them to me. But that's the kind of guy he was. We were in Biarritz, France one time. Beautiful resort area right on the coast, right at the point of where France goes into Spain. We're having dinner one night, and he says, Don, Mary, and I are talking about going to Monte Carlo. He said, won't you check and see if we could get out of here and fly over there? He said, probably have to fly into Nice. I don't think Monte Carlo has an airport. I'd never been to Monte Carlo. I didn't know. So anyway, I check airlines. Well, to get out of Biarritz, you're going to have to fly a commuter flight back to Paris or go to Geneva and then down. So I tell him that. He said, I don't want to do that. I said, that's too much walking in airports and trouble. He says, don't they have charter jets around here? I said, well, I don't know. I'm sure we can get one. He said, well, let's just do a non-stopper. Again, never ask what it costs, but I charter us a little jet, and we get on it and fly to Nice and have a car pick us up and take us to Monte Carlo. Just on the spare of the moment, just let's do this.
Don't they say if you've got to ask how much it costs, you probably can't afford it?
Yeah, I've heard that.
He could afford anything he wanted, really.
He could.
So money was never an object to him.
Never an object, but as I said, he didn't flaunt it. If he wanted a new yacht, he'd buy it. If he wanted another airplane, he'd go buy it. But he didn't flaunt it. He didn't have a G5. Now, we had nice jets, but it wasn't ostentatious.
He could have bought more plane than he bought.
More plane and more yacht. He was constantly having me to look for a larger, different yacht. I mean, I flew up to Manitowoc, Wisconsin, where they make the burgers, which is the ultimate in the yachts. I went with him to Amsterdam to the Fed ship factory, looking at Fed ships. He just loved that.
Now, his father, James...
Oh, would never do that. No, no, no. More conservative. That was a waste.
Didn't it feel good? We'd all love to work for somebody that we feel like we're buddies with.
That's right.
And you felt you were a buddy, didn't you, for Alan?
I was. I was a close friend, and I knew that. About 2 weeks before he passed away, he called me to his house. He knew that he was failing. We sat around and just reminisced for a while in his study. And finally he said, "You know, I'm not going to be here forever." He said, "I don't know anything about your finances. If there's anything you need that I can help you with, if you got any bank debt or anything like that, we probably ought to take care of it now, because I'm not going to be around forever." I looked at him and I said, "Mr. Chapman, thanks to you, I'm in pretty doggone good shape." He said, "Do you have any debt?" I said, "No." He said, "Boy, I could sure help you out if you needed it." I looked at him, I said, "Have I ever asked you for any money?" He said, "No." I said, "I probably never will. But if I ever do, you'll know that I really need it. And I don't need it now." But that's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah. I was going to ask the question, how would you like us to remember him? And maybe you've said it.
Close friend. He was a close friend, yeah. And he didn't have many, but I knew that I was one of them. That meant a lot. A close friend you would never betray, you would never take from. But he was a good man. He was a different man.